Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from Jeld-Wen. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on Jeld-Wen windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey, Nathan.
Yeah.
You know what's really popular right now?
Yes, I do, actually. Special types of swimming suits. The ones that are kind of like Speedos, but they're a little longer. They're like skin-tight Speedos.
No, I don't know anything about skin-tight Speedos.
Oh, damn. I guess I'm the only one.
No, what I was talking about was big-ass SUVs.
Oh, those too. Yes. Huge SUVs are very popular right now.
They're having kind of their moment in the light right now. For some reason, everybody wants one of these big, family-hauling, massive tailor towing, off-road going, overland, possibly driving SUVs.
Yeah, they are. And it's a funny time to want it, too, because gas is ridiculous. And these things are not cheap to keep running. But right now, it's a sort of a resurgence. Not only are these big SUVs popular, but new ones are coming out.
So we've got a list here of the most popular ones out there. And we are going to be talking about them. We're going to give you our impressions because we have driven most of these.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be talking about towing. We're going to be talking about, you know, all of the infotainment, everything that goes along with these things' price. But before we get to that, let's talk about some of the vehicles that we have driven here that are at the office and kind of just go through some of the recent reviews we've done. And some of them are pretty cool. So you recently took the new Honda Passport.
Yeah, I took it to Tumbleweed.
Yep.
And over at the ranch, I got to take it into the snow. Now, the cool thing about that is that about 3 months ago, I took it into the Borrego Desert.
Right, this is the adventure one.
Right, this is the Honda Passport Trail Sport. And they're not full-blown off-road vehicles, honestly. You know, it's not. But they look kind of off-roady. They're really not. But it performed really well on rough surfaces and everything but, say, rocks. It can do quite well. So I took it on snow at the ranch and had a chance to really flick it around and have a great time. It did really, really well. That video just came out. It's remarkably good. That IVTM4 system for all-wheel drive is fantastic.
So you can select different modes, right? You've got like sand, snow.
Yep.
And does that work or is it just?
It really does work. Yeah. And it can send up to 70% of the power to the rear. Mm. And then it does torque vectoring where at the rear it can move it around. So you can use it on the asphalt when you're driving around or off road. So it does a little bit of both and it does it effectively. And because it's the Passport as opposed to a Pilot, it's a little bit smaller. It has better off road angles. It has better, you know, ground clearance, better approach angles, stuff like that. And altogether, I would say that it's pretty competent for a crossover.
So if you guys are looking for an adventure-looking vehicle.
Yeah.
I mean, you know how we are, right? We like things that are actually real versus appearance, right? And this thing, like Honda has these tires on it that have like
Firestones.
That have this like pattern on the outside that makes it look like they're off-roady, but the actual tread pattern is just a standard.
It's just a standard all season,
yeah.
But you know, it did really good in the snow.
Did it?
Okay. Yeah, those tires are actually decent in the snow, but off-road, I've taken them off-road and they were woefully unprepared for off-roading. So if you're serious about off-roading, the IVTM4 system works good. The tires do not, so just switch the tires.
How about room? I mean, it's a very roomy.
Really, really roomy. Yeah. You and I could sit in there, and we're really big guys, and we wouldn't touch shoulders or even come close. It's as wide as, you know, a minivan, pretty much, because it is based on a similar platform.
And let's face it, it is the male version of the minivan, right?
Yeah.
And they made it a little bit more.
Well, I guess the Pilot would be, because that has the third row. This doesn't have a third row. This just has two very big rows.
So they added some testosterone by making it look
off-roady and still has some pretty good numbers, and it works well. It just works.
So when that first came out, Tommy and I went to shoot it in California, and then they had actually done one where they'd actually added like real off-road bits and pieces to it.
Yeah.
And I just wish Honda, if you're listening, build that one.
Wait a minute, folks. Hold on. Honda told me at the event, they straight told me that they will have other components available very soon for that vehicle, which will make it even more off-roady. That's tires, wheels, suspension, possibly armor, and more.
Yeah.
Making it closer to the vehicle that you reviewed.
Yeah, because I mean, I remember they added some color to the inside, right? Like the stitching was orange. Yeah.
Because orange is off-road.
Orange is off-road.
Right?
Like blue is green and green is blue.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of ridiculous. But Honda did a really good job making this thing look fun and behave well. They need to take it up a step, and I think they know that, which is why they'll have these options available very soon on their website for that vehicle, and possibly other ones, too, in the future.
All right. Now, today, you just took a vehicle that I remember I went on the program for, gosh, it must be almost 3 years ago, the Honda Escape plug-in hybrid.
I know.
Like, that was supposed to come out literally, like, 3 years ago.
About 3 years ago, yeah.
I remember I took it out. We drove it. I forget where we were at, somewhere, on the East Coast. And I was impressed by it. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of got lost in the shuffle, right? It's basically the chassis that also underpins the Bronco Sport.
Oh, and more. There's more to it than that. This car is the granddaddy also to the Ford Maverick.
Yeah, exactly. The same powertrain.
Two of the most popular non-F-150-based vehicles or non-pickup truck-based vehicles that Ford is selling right now. And the one that I drove just today, and we got a chance to do a full little thing about five things that are great and not so great about it, that thing is remarkably capable when it comes to mileage. 37 miles on a charge, which is the most of pretty much any vehicle in its class for an electric charge. 40 miles per gallon, regular running, that's if you run it like a regular hybrid. 105 mpge if you're just, you know, using both. And if you think about it, that is pretty damn impressive, but there is a massive problem, Roman.
What's that?
It doesn't have an all-wheel drive option.
Really?
Yeah, so only front-wheel drive.
Only front-wheel drive.
Right.
Whoa.
Which is the same problem that they have.
So maybe they're thinking like, hey, if you want the four-wheel drive, get yourself the Bronco Sport.
Or other escapes. Right. You can get a hybrid Escape, which has a mechanical four-wheel drive system.
But not the plug-in.
Right. The plug-in hybrid does not have all-wheel drive. And interesting, so the Maverick hybrid, the regular hybrid Maverick, does not have all-wheel drive currently, although there's rumors that they're going to work on that. So I'm thinking that, A, they're going to take the plug-in hybrid system, which works really well from this vehicle, pop it into the Bronco Sport, which makes total sense, right? And also the Maverick, which makes total sense. But they need to add an all-wheel drive system or else they're going to fall on their face.
Yeah, especially since, like, the king of that segment right now, the one that is vastly popular, is the RAV4 Prime.
Which is super powerful compared to this. The RAV4 is a monster.
It's a monster, right? Yeah. If you guys can get one and you're looking for a vehicle that's not just off-road kind of capable, but certainly very quick.
Over 300 horsepower.
And then I think it's got, 40 miles of range, all electric?
Something to that effect, yeah.
It's really good. So that one is just, you know.
It's a beast.
Yeah. And if Ford wants to compete, which is, you know, this is a direct competitor, right?
In many ways it is.
Yeah, they need to step up their game.
Yeah, they do. But this is a good start, even though it's a big question of why did it take them so long.
I think they had issues with batteries.
That may have been it.
Because I remember, I think there was a story we covered where, like, they were starting to catch fire in Europe. Not in America, but I think in Europe they had some fire issues.
That's a big issue.
Correct me if I'm wrong in the comments.
Yeah, by all means. Yeah. Lithium-ion batteries do have that issue, and this one is a 14.1 kilowatt-hour battery. But here's the thing,
Roman.
Big. You and I drove something very similar to this years and years ago.
Which was?
The C-Max. Remember that?
Oh, yeah, the C-Max.
Yeah, I know nobody wanted it, but the C-Max was cool. It had the battery was about half the size
MPV,
of this one.
MPV, people hauler.
It was a people hauler, and it was really, really...
It was under Alan Mulally. They were trying to bring, like, European, right, cars to America, and those kind of... That segment, that people hauling segment, which we call minivans in America, but they call people movers.
It's kind of a wagon, really.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. They thought maybe, and it didn't.
It didn't. If they made it look like a crossover or an SUV, it probably would have sold a lot more. But that technology has been around for a long time at Ford, 2017 we're talking about. So this you know, version of it, it's a big question mark why it took so long to get here. And it would be great if you guys are, you know, listening or watching, let us know if you've heard anything as to the reason why it took so long to get here.
So I was in California yesterday, Nathan, driving the, and I can't, I hate saying this, but I'm just saying why I was out there. I don't like, I hate when podcasts say, I can't tell you about it, embargo, but I can't
yes.
until March 22nd. But I was driving the new Porsche GT4 RS.
I hate you, but yes.
Okay. But the interesting part was I saw gas at $6.50 a gallon.
Yeah.
And this was in big outside of Big Willow. If you're from LA, you'll know where that's at, I hope.
Mm-hmm.
In California, it's a racetrack. And I think we're heading that way. I stopped, I had to get gas. It was $4 a gallon for the expensive stuff
for
here.
For the premium?
Yeah. And I think it's going that way. And obviously, the reason for that is because what's happening in the Ukraine. And, of course, our hearts go out to the people of the Ukraine. You know, we feel horrible about what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But we also kind of feel that you know, you don't come here to get more depressed.
So, right. We don't talk politics here.
Right.
So if you ever wonder why we don't talk about politics, it's because we don't talk politics here. We talk cars and
yeah.
trucks.
So we figure people come here to get away from that. But,
right.
But we did want to just, you know, mention that.
Absolutely. A lot of us have friends and family, and it's a scary situation. So what we're going to do is we're going to say that hopefully gas prices will come down when this is resolved. But just
but they're
going to
go up before they go down.
Oh, of course
so,
they are.
So that's why,
it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah, that's why I'm bringing up these kinds of, you know. So I remember back in 2000, when was it, like 9 when gas prices went through the roof?
It's 2008, 2009.
So, yeah, remember, and everybody, like, you couldn't get a Prius to save your life, right?
Yeah, I know.
And I think we're going to see the same sort of thing. I think, you know, there comes a turning point where people start to change their buying decisions
mm-hmm.
Based on the cost of gasoline.
I agree 100%. And I have a feeling that right now we're hearing that, 2% of the people right now are buying electric vehicles. I think that's going to triple.
All electrics, yeah.
Yeah.
That's going to blow up.
It's going to go through the roof. And rightfully so, because it's a lot less expensive to run on an electric vehicle.
Especially if you charge at home.
If you charge at home, which I do.
Yeah.
You know how much I've paid for charging my daughter's car in 2 years? It's been 2 years now.
Now you should mention that you have one of the, 2014 Nissan?
No, 16. 2016,
oh, sorry, 16,
Nissan Leaf. It has the larger 30-kilowatt-hour battery. My daughter has been trying her hardest to butcher the poor car since we bought it. And it's been really good. It's a good little reliable little car. So far at charge point and one other place, I think I combined in 2 years that I've spent about $11 to keep it running. And we put on about 15,000 miles in 2 years. And that's mostly
$11 like public charging.
Yep, public charging. At home, it's a totally different story.
Right.
It's about $50 a month
right.
that it costs, which is still a hell of a lot less than filling it up. And my daughter drives the crap out of it.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like all the prevailing winds are blowing gas going up to right now. As we tape this or record this, it's like $111.
Per barrel,
and I think it's probably going to go up from there.
Well, they say it's going to drop a little bit with the Fed opening up the Federal Reserves.
Yeah, but they did that 2 days ago, and it hasn't.
It hasn't dropped yet.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see what happens. But the thing is that these vehicles are still really, really popular. These giant SUVs that we're going to be talking about, and none of them get particularly good mileage.
So here's the thing, right? I think this is going to do two things. I think it's going to explode hybrids and electric cars, right?
Yep.
Because you know the one hybrid that I think is way undervalued is the Prius. You know, we had the Prius here,
mm-hmm.
right? And Tommy was getting, get this, 56 mpg.
56.
We got a bunch of little motorcycles here.
Yeah.
The Triumph I have, I think that's rated. It's a 1200cc scrambler. That's rated at 56. And this Prius, which is a car with like doors and windows.
And actually a lot of cargo space too.
Air conditioning.
Yeah. It just gets crazy good mileage. Now, bear in mind, that was the Prius without the all-wheel drive.
Right. That was the front-wheel drive one.
Right. You can actually get two different other types of Prius. One that has all-wheel drive and the other one that's a plug-in, right? Isn't there the Prius Prime?
There's a Prius Prime.
Yeah,
there's
it.
A Prime, and then there's an all-wheel drive. But I'm just saying, I think they're going to get very popular.
I would agree.
And little mini motors, I think, are going to get very popular because we've got a little Navi here
mm-hmm.
for the bike channel, and that thing gets over 100 miles a gallon, and so does a little Monkey. So we'll be fighting over it. Do you want the Navi or the Monkey, Nathan?
The last thing you want is a big fat guy like me riding a Monkey around.
So you want the Navi.
That sounds really crazy. Yeah, the Navi's a little bit bigger. So it's still a weird-looking bike for people to hop on. No, I think – thank you very much, but I think I'm good with electric cars. Electric cars will be just fine for me or plug-in hybrids.
Yeah, but your daughter's going to have that. You're going to be fighting for that.
No, she's going to school. I'm going to get rid of her and keep her car and drive it around, you know. But, I do agree that there's going to be a major shift, and it's going to happen soon, I think. Right now, obviously, it's hard enough just to get a car.
Yeah.
But I think that they're going to see a big shift with some of these other vehicles that have been undervalued and underappreciated that get really good mileage, and they're going to come back into vogue just like they did in 2008, 2009.
The other thing that I think is going to come back into vogue, speaking of looking into the future, mm-hmm. are probably diesels. For a long time, let's face it, Volkswagen kind of took the diesel and shot it in the head.
Yeah, no, seriously, they did.
And then kicked it.
Thanks, Volkswagen.
And then kicked it and then shot it again.
And FCA did too. I mean, a lot of other companies did their part, but Volkswagen. Yeah, Volkswagen really was the catalyst. Yeah, we know that. But right now, what's funny is that other companies that did have diesels just recently got rid of them. Right,
GM. That straight six is a magnificent.
That's really good. That's still out. Fortunately, that's popular.
Ford got rid of theirs.
Ford got rid of theirs.
The Lightning coming. Yeah.
Right.
That was not a good diesel though.
It wasn't great. It was based on a Range Rover design.
FCA Stellantis still has theirs.
Yes, they do, but only in the trucks. But in terms of cars, there are very few diesel cars out there.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about what diesel cars are left out there in the market.
Now, GMC just recently got rid of their Terrain, I believe. It had a little diesel in it. I don't think they sell
that
anymore.
But that straight six does go into some of these big vehicles that we talk about. So you could get an Escalade.
Yes.
We'll talk about that in a second.
And Suburban and whatnot, yes.
Yeah.
But and that's a wonderful powertrain. But that's different. In terms of cars, I cannot think of any car right now in the United States. There might be a Mercedes Blue or something like that I'm not thinking about. That's kind of under the covers.
Well, how about that? Did Jeep get rid of the So Jeep went 4xe, so they got
no. The they still have their diesel. It's still available, but that
not the new Grand Cherokee.
No, not I'm not talking the Grand Cherokee. I'm talking about the
Gladiator. You can get it in the Gladiator.
Gladiator and Wrangler. You can get the
And the Gladiator and the Wrangler. Yeah, you can get that diesel.
Yeah, but they're doing the 4xe that's coming out soon.
And I say that because if you guys have been following our other podcast that you and Andre do sometimes, mm-hmm. The truck podcast, I just happened to be towing today a skid steer.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing a new series, by the way, called Thank You for the Name. Your brilliant, brilliant Nathan came up with the name. Taming Tumbleweed. And we're doing kind of like a version of Clarkson's Farm, except with a ranch. So sorry, Jeremy, I'm probably copying.
We're poaching. We do it all the time.
Yeah, we do it. Everybody does it. So
yeah.
So anyway, so we're laying down rock, and we needed a skid steer. And there was mm-hmm. a company that out of Denver that we're working with now that lent us this Caterpillar skid steer and a trailer, because Andre's got the trailer in Arizona.
Right.
So I was towing 11,000. Actually, David was towing 11,000. With the Cummins 2500 Ram, what kind of fuel economy do you think David managed to get towing from downtown Denver to the ranch?
This is our new Cummins.
This is our new Cummins, towing 11,000 pounds with a Cummins from, I'd say about 60, 70 miles, maybe, mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah,
on the highway, mainly. What do you think he managed to get?
7 miles per gallon.
15.
Wait, while towing?
Yeah. 15 mpg.
How the hell did he do that?
Because it's fuel efficient.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's 50. Way better. See, that's the thing, is that people tend to skew, and I totally forgot how efficient diesels can be.
Yeah.
That's
so
remarkable.
Let's put that into perspective. Andre just towed down to Phoenix our F-100 with the Tundra, mm-hmm. and he was getting, I think, 8.
Yeah, that's where my head was on that.
Yeah, so, and that's less weight. That was like 8,000, maybe 7,000, something like that.
Completely different powertrain, but the Tundra is built to tow.
Yeah.
I mean, it runs at low RPM, and it's still, I mean, that's
twin turbo V6, Cummins 15.
Wow, that is really impressive.
Amazing, huh?
So, I mean, unfortunately, I don't think automakers can hit a button and bring back diesels that they just recently discontinued. It's difficult to go backwards, right? But I think that you'll see perhaps more of these large SUVs.
Yeah, I think there'll be a spike in those like Volkswagen Group 3-liter diesels, right? So there was obviously a Touareg that had it.
Right.
There was a Porsche that I don't know if the Porsche still has it.
I'm sure they don't.
You think they got rid of it? The hybrid?
The U.S. The word
they
diesel.
They had a hybrid diesel, I think.
I don't know about a hybrid diesel. I don't know. But no, I don't know about our market. I know they had a diesel. I know they had a hybrid.
I could Google it, but you guys can Google it too.
Yeah, you can. But no, I think that in our market, currently only trucks are diesels right now. I can't think of a diesel car that exists in the
Wrangler,
United States.
Which is a Jeep.
It's a Jeep. Yeah. I don't consider that a car.
Yeah, really. And Escalade, right? Tahoe. You can get those
but those are trucks.
Yeah. So where are we talking about them in the car podcast?
I know, seriously. Well, I think one of the reasons why is because this is cross-pollination. These vehicles appeal to car people and truck people.
Yeah.
So and
we always had a hard time figuring out if this goes on car or truck.
Right. And this particular one, because I think that this really does kind of fish into both bowls, you are talking about 1, 2, 3 different vehicles that are on this list that I can see that will be using as an option a straight six diesel, a diesel we love.
Yeah,
it's a the Duramax straight six diesel is one of the best out there. I've said it a million times, and I'll say it a million more. It's wonderful, but there are also V8s. There's twin turbocharged V6s on this list, and there's a twin turbocharged V6 hybrid on this list.
All right, so let's talk about the new Navigator. The 2022 has been refreshed. I went to Phoenix.
That was like last week, right?
Yeah, to test drive it, exactly. And Ford basically gave it a facelift, and they gave it some new colors, some new options, some new wheels. Basically, the vehicle, I'll go over the notes here, has a 440 horsepower, 3.5 liter twin turbo V6, 10-speed automatic, tows 8,700 pounds, with a base price of about $90,000, and it's one of the most, according to your notes, powerful and luxurious vehicles in its class.
And I'm not wrong about the powerful part.
No, I was actually driving the Manhattan...
Black Label?
Yeah, Black Label, which was this beautiful green color with this really cool... And there's a walk-around video over at TFL Car, or just go to tfl-studios.com where we put up all of our videos. Anyway, the thing about this vehicle is... the styling is kind of mid-century modern. So imagine like, what was that show with the ad agency? What was that one called?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
The ad agency with the guy.
Mad Men.
Yeah.
Oh, that.
Yeah, so that's mid-century modern.
Okay.
Right, so that's the vibe they're going for.
So they're
right?
going for that 1950s, ties, late, yeah. Early 1960s. Yeah, yeah,
skinny,
I got you.
Skinny ties, skinny suits.
The way I dress daily.
The way we don't dress at all. cigarette in one hand, right. Martini in the other.
I try for that, but I can't pull it off. I'm married.
So that's mid-century modern, right?
No, I get you. I believe.
And so... it's very American. It's a very American form of luxury. Obviously, it competes with some of the other cars that we'll be talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I was astoundingly getting like 18 mpg driving it from Phoenix to Payson.
If you think about the size of this vehicle and the fact that it weighs...
Three rows.
Yeah, three rows is a full-size truck.
It's a big boy.
Yeah, and this is... Did you drive the L model or did you drive?
I drove both of them. But okay, the one where I got the fuel economy wasn't the long one. It was just a regular one. It's
probably within pretty close.
Yeah, it's like that. And I'm holding up my hand. It's like a big musky size difference.
Okay. Well, the point is that's pretty impressive for a gas engine. EcoBoost has come a long way from the early days to where it wasn't very efficient. Now it's much more efficient.
I think the part that really makes it efficient is right here, the 10-speed, right?
Yep.
It gives it a lot more range and it makes it much more, almost like infinite overdrive in some
ways. Yeah, and super, super smooth between shifts from what I've been told. I get the whole design ethic in terms of what they were saying, but I don't see the Lincoln Continental that I love so much in this.
Yeah, it's a little, so I'll give you the good or the bad.
Okay, please.
Which would you rather have first?
Bad first.
It's a little bit like that dude at Thanksgiving dinner who should have pushed himself away from the table, like two helpings ago.
So you were at my Thanksgiving last year, huh?
That was a comment, by the way, that somebody wrote down on my video. I didn't come up with that. I can't take credit for it. But it's a fair comment.
Yeah.
It's a little on the...
Bloated?
On the bloated side, yeah. I mean, everything is big and... voluptuous, and the seats. I think the seats have 80 different ways of adjusting themselves.
I've heard a lot of people absolutely love them, though. Did you like the seats, didn't you? Once you figured out the 90 different or 80 different things,
So what you can do is obviously figure it out. Then you've got the little touchpad where you can have your own user preference. Once you get it comfortable, but getting it comfortable, dude,
it takes a while,
right? Because not only does the side bolsters, right, but also the back not just does this, but then there's another cushion in front of the back, so not only reclines, but then it also kind of folds forward. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, pulls it, so something pushes forward.
Yeah, where your back is. So the entire seat folds forward, and then there's a cushion that also folds forward. And then you've got the coolest thing about it is you got those thigh supports. How on European cars you pull them out?
Yeah,
these are two of them. They're two separate, so they roll out. So you can individually control your thigh support. So you've got one leg that's shorter than the other.
Which I actually do. So I get it. I totally get it. I think that's cool. And it's a seat game and then it's an electronics game. And there's always, the contest is always going to be that way, right? I look at this vehicle from the outside. I aesthetics are really important to me. And I think of it as, I like the grill.
A lot of chrome.
Yeah, I like what they did with the grill because it does remind me of the older cars, but that's it. Everything else is just kind of a little too Ford Expedition-ish for me.
Fair enough, yeah. And so the other thing they did, which was interesting, is they took wood, which you'd expect, real wood.
Yeah, real wood.
And then for the first time ever in history, that's what the board says, they laser etched, like you'd have a dark piece of wood and then it laser etched into that wood, like the wood that is, you know, in the front of the passenger dashboard, right? Uh-huh. If you've got the Manhattan package, you know, the Central Park package, you've got Central Park topographical map lasered etched into this wood.
Really?
So if you look down, you can see like the park. And
right,
the
right. And, you know, it's funny because I remember Jeep doing that years ago with hood ornaments.
It's like a thing now.
And then decorations.
So the Hummer EV does that. Like the Hummer EV, because it's like you can only get it in white, right?
Right.
It's a space shot, so they like put the topography of the moon into the floor mat and into the material of the truck. This time they took wood and laser etched.
Like, so maybe their point of it being the first is doing it with wood. Perhaps
or laser etching, yeah.
Or
laser,
okay.
I don't know, man. It, you know, it's a nice touch.
They want it to be exclusive. I totally get that.
And then it's got a push button transmission, which, you know, I can't stand. Yeah.
But a lot of people are doing that. In fact, half the vehicles on this list do that.
And here's the part that I really didn't like. Okay, plenty of room. Actually, plenty of room in the back seat and plenty of room in the way back seat. So it's big.
Yeah.
But here's the crazy part. So remember, like a lot of these vehicles had a standard low range.
Yeah.
This doesn't have a standard low range. Oh, it doesn't even have standard locking diffs. You can get an all-wheel drive, but you have to get the right package. So you got to get like the Black Series, which can get up to like $120,000. And then there's no way to engage low range or lockers. The only way that you can do that is if you have it. If you've got the higher end spec, then you've got those Ford different terrain management modes, right? So if you engage like slippery, it might engage the locker. You know what I mean?
Or maybe, I see what you're saying.
You know what I mean?
So it's feeding power differently based on what you decide to choose.
Yeah, based on the terrain management mode.
Yeah.
So you have no way. First of all, you don't know. You know, you have to ask and you have to look on the Monroney to see if you actually have the low range.
Right.
Or the locking. Actually, not even a locker. It's got limited slip.
Okay.
So some of them don't even have limited slip. Some of them are just four-wheel drive open diffs.
Okay.
And then if you get the right one, you might get all-wheel drive with limited diffs, and then if you get the really right one, you might have all-wheel drive with limited slip diffs with a low range. But there's no way to engage it. Like I say, you have to know what drive mode.
Okay,
so I found that very confusing.
Yeah, it's confusing just hearing about it. So the bottom line is that if you wanted to get an actual 4x4 version of this, that you would actually take it off-road occasionally.
Get the Explorer Timberline.
Explorer Timberline or Excursion.
Timberline.
Expedition
Timberline.
Yeah, Timberline. Gotcha. Okay, yeah. That makes total sense.
Yeah, don't get the Lincoln. I think they're thinking this is a truck for the city.
It sounds like all-wheel drive would make total sense. And there are other automakers that do that with all-wheel drive. We've actually had experience with an old Escalade that had all-wheel drive.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a lot more, far more prevalent on a feature thing we're doing, which is called Go Big. TFL's Go Big, I should say. And that's coming up in the near future. And
up on truck. Yeah, that's our next series. It's season 3 in our No Pavement Needed.
Yep.
So anyway, so that's kind of the Navigator, you know. It's not inexpensive. It's big. It's luxurious. It's powerful. And it's not an off-roader, I would say.
No, it's not. Now, let's talk about its direct competitor, which I think is the Cadillac Escalade ESV.
All right. What about it?
Now, that one is 227 inches, whereas in the Navigator is 221, and that's the L.
Yep.
So it's still a bigger vehicle.
Is that 221 on the L in the Navigator?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So it's a little bit bigger, 6 inches.
Yeah, it's bigger. Yeah. 420 horsepower, and that comes from the 6.2 liter V8. We had a lot of experience with it. It's a solid engine.
It is.
But not as powerful as the one that Ford has. But you can also get that 3-liter I6 diesel, which makes 277 horsepower. Bear in mind, very, very torquey powertrain. Maximum towing, 7,500 pounds. And the base price for the Cadillac is $79,295.
Yeah,
good luck
with that.
Yeah. Seriously, you're never going to get that.
Okay.
And it is currently, the Escalade for years has been the best-selling Cadillac builds.
Yeah.
And in the very near future, they've already announced, we already know it's coming, a powerful V version is coming. We don't know what the output is, but it's supposed to be a beast with a supercharger.
Yeah. So, you know, my take on the Escalade is it's probably the best Cadillac you could buy because it represents a different kind of American luxury, right? It's not mid-century modern or whatever the heck that design is. It's more art and science, right? That's the design theme. But let's face it, it's just big, bold, and like in your face.
It really is in your face.
I was just at the airport waiting to get it picked up, and the guy said he was driving well, we'll get to this in a second, a Yukon, but then a bunch of black Cadillacs came by, and with that light strip going down the side, it's pretty, like, it's like the car that, like, the gangsta would drive. Or would be driven in.
Yeah, or the celebrity.
Or the rapper, or,
Yeah, exactly.
It feels like it's got rock star status.
Yeah, it screams, look at me, but don't look at me too close. Yeah, I get
look
that.
Look at me, but you can't see me.
But you can't see me.
Because I'm hiding behind it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the Cadillac definitely has a lot more presence, and that V8 burble is addictive. It sounds amazing.
But it only tows 7,500 pounds.
Yeah, and I think that has to do with the fact that it's a full luxury vehicle loaded with heavy, heavy leathers and electronics and everything else. So it doesn't tow as well as, say, its baby brother.
It feels more modern than the Navigator, I would say. It feels a little bit more like in tune with the current aesthetic. Mm-hmm. I would say that it also is a little bit more sinister.
Yeah, I would agree.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And in terms of opulence, it does have this giant screen. Remember, you can get
yeah,
it with this
all the way across.
All the way across. And it both actually, I can talk about this, but Lincoln's got this thing called Active Glide, which is their version of autonomous. I shouldn't use the word autonomous, but kind of self-driving, where you're geo-fenced on certain highways.
Oh, okay. I wonder if that's similar.
Does Active Glide sound naughty? It just sounds naughty to me.
There's a lot of things that sound naughty, but I do agree that does.
Ford calls theirs Blue Cruise.
Blue Cruise, yes.
And then they decided to make it Active Glide with Lincoln. Why wouldn't you just keep it Blue Cruise?
Because they want to separate Ford, which is known as the Blue Oval.
But it's the same thing. It's the same.
I agree 100%. I'm just telling you. But see, Cadillac and GM, they are together with the word Super Cruise, and there's going to be an Ultra Cruise coming out soon.
Okay.
So, and Cadillac, or actually General Motors, does trounce Ford/Lincoln with that Super Cruise system. Andre and I just did a podcast about that, by the way.
Yeah.
Which should be out about the time you guys are hearing this.
So Ford's Active Glide, Lincoln's Active Glide, is $500. How much is GM's?
I cannot tell you. I do not know. I know it's part of packages, though.
Okay.
Yeah. I just don't have the price
in my head. Which seems just shockingly cheap when you compare it to Tesla's full self-driving, which is $12,000. And I'm not talking about Tesla's full self-driving beta. I'm just talking about Tesla's full self-driving.
Right.
And the difference between that. So we should talk about
that, sure.
Right? So like the Lincoln and the Cadillac have both lane centering and proximity cruise control. So basically you can tell the thing to stay in its lane,
yep.
And then you can tell it to stay a certain distance away from the car in front of it.
Which is sort of like the basis of what a lot of vehicles have.
Right, a lot of vehicles have that. But that's not Active Glide.
No.
So, and that's like autopilot on a Tesla.
Yeah.
Right? Now, full self-driving, which would be the equivalent of kind of Auto Glide and Blue Cruise and GM. What's GM's?
Super Cruise.
Super Cruise, yeah. Basically, the car will drive itself. So you can take your hands off the wheel, and you can take your foot off the accelerator or the brake, and then the car will drive itself on a highway. On a highway. Like I say, it's fenced, right?
Yeah.
Geo-fenced. You can only go in certain
And they're parts. Also mapped.
And they're also mapped.
Yeah.
In the parts that are mapped, then you can drive it.
And that's the big difference is that with Ford's, Lincoln's, that system works with the vehicle specifically, whereas in with GM's, you can tow.
You can also have a tow.
So you can't do that with Ford.
And Tesla does the same thing with full self-driving, except now there's full self-driving beta, which works everywhere. But according to a lot of videos online, it doesn't work very well everywhere.
Yeah, it spazzes out, and there have been some few crashes too and whatnot. But the system is remarkable, and they are changing the algorithm of it, and they're using cameras instead of radar or radar instead of cameras. So, they're doing these changes with Tesla.
So here's – I used Active Glide, and here's my takeaway, right?
Please.
So the way Active Glide works is – and the same with GMs, right? It monitors your eyes.
Among other things.
Yeah, so as long as your eyes are on the road and not on a device texting or, you know, looking at your wife with passion. As long as they're on the road, right, or your girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever it is, it lets you, if your eyes are wandering for whatever reason, then it warns you, and then eventually it says, nope, you got to drive the vehicle yourself.
Right, and that also has to do with other types of input as well. So it monitors whether or not you've touched the steering wheel, am I correct?
No, you can keep your hands off the steering
wheel. Completely off the steering wheel, okay.
Yeah, so that's why I said it's like full self-driving.
Okay.
So basically with LaneKeep, right, mm-hmm. you have what I call a steering wheel nanny. Mm-hmm. So if you have a car with LaneKeep, it'll drive itself, but you have to keep your hands on the wheel.
Right.
Right. So if you same thing with Tesla's autopilot. If you take your hand off the wheel, it yells at you, it nags you to put your hands back on
the wheel. And then eventually it'll just
shut itself off. With the next level of autonomy, you can keep your hands off the wheel, but then you get the eye nanny. Mm-hmm. Right. So if your eyes aren't on the road,
it
nags you and yells at you. And both of those I find very
intrusive.
Yeah, just not fun to use.
Okay.
They're just not fun to use because, look, I think humans are really good at paying attention and we're really good at not paying attention.
Okay.
We're really bad at kind of that in-between, which is what the vehicle is asking you to do, to kind of pay attention, right? Where you're sitting there and the car is driving itself, but you still have to be paying attention.
I'll tell you.
The eye nanny.
Yeah, I got you there. And Andre and I, we did discuss this. And one thing that I mentioned, which I think would be valuable with most systems, when I'm talking on the phone, and it's always hands-free, right?
Right.
There are times to where I might wander a little bit in my thoughts, and so driving and talking at the same time, not the best combination, but if I were on autopilot going cross-country, let's say, and just letting the car take care of it, and somebody was talking to me, let's say my wife, and she's yelling at me, which would be nothing new, I would probably be pretty cool about being in this total, idle mode and still looking ahead, especially when I say, honey, I'm losing attention, the car is correcting me, I have to go. You see where that goes? Yeah, see, it works really well that way. But I do agree that this is a weird zone we're in right now with autonomy. I personally would love the thing where it's either no autonomy or all autonomy.
Yeah, you know what
I
mean?
Where I hit a button and say, just take me home.
Or not paying attention.
Right.
We're really bad at that. And we're in that weird middle space.
Yeah.
And you've got steering wheel nannies and eye nannies, and it's just no fun. It's just super stressful. Right, because the idea of the car driving itself is you can just relax, right? That's what's in your head. You're like, hey, I can just relax. I can check my email. No, you can't. You can just sit there. And at that point, I'd rather just drive it myself.
Yeah.
If I'm going to have to pay attention to the road in such a way that every 2.5 seconds something beeps at me or yells or, a light shines at me, I'll just drive.
Yeah, I like long-distance driving, so I don't mind doing it. But I as I said, there are a couple times where I can see this being valuable. But
you know where it really works? In stop-and-go traffic.
Yeah.
Because that's no fun, right?
When yeah,
just,
that sucks.
And then the car just kind of locks on the car in front of you.
Yeah.
As long as you're paying attention.
And it keeps the distance and everything
and
else.
That's fine, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. Let's move on, though, because we've covered those two. Quickly go over the Chevy Suburban and the GMC Yukon XL.
Yeah, basically
same things.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're both the 226 inches, basically. Base engine is a 355 horsepower 5.3 liter V8, which is not adequate for those. The one that is adequate is the 6.2 liter V8, or, as we said before,
inline six
diesel is fantastic for it. 10-speed automatic transmission, maximum towing, 7,800 pounds.
Yeah, plenty for most people.
Yeah, I would agree.
Big boat, big camper.
Yeah. Now, by the way, when we're mentioning maximum towing, often it's dealing with the rear drive versions of these trucks.
And not the all-wheel drive.
Right. All-wheel drive tends to lower the numbers, and usually the larger engine tends to lower the numbers, too, because of weight. This is still the leading SUV in all of the SUVs that are on this list, and that's because it's a Suburban. And Suburbans are just super popular, and they always have been, and they may continue to be because they recently were seriously redone.
So a couple things that people may be wondering, how do these three compare? When I say three, I mean Escalade, Suburban, Yukon, and Navigator to each other. There's a couple like key features. First of all, the Suburban and the Yukon have a low range, right? Or they have 4 auto, so.
Yeah, those, no, they have low ranges.
Right, yeah, which is, a little bit different than the Navigator. They also have air suspension in the back, which is cool, available air suspension.
The Navigator
does not have air suspension.
You're kidding.
No.
For that money, it doesn't have air suspension?
No. So holy only cow. The back on the Suburban and GMC, but nevertheless, it's good because it gives you a softer ride.
Oh, yeah.
It stops you from squat. Actually, I think you can get full air suspension.
I thought it was full air suspension.
Yeah, because I know that the...
The Tahoe does.
The Tahoe definitely has it because you can raise it. Yeah,
Tahoe,
Yukon definitely have it.
Yeah, so that is... And I know the Cadillac has four-corner suspension.
Yeah.
So I'm really surprised that the No. Are you sure the Navigator?
Yes, 100%.
Holy cow.
When they told me, I was like, you sure? Like, just like, yeah. They're like, yeah.
You know, wow, that's strange.
Yeah. Coil springs, dude.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, Ford knows what they're doing. I know it has a nice ride. I've heard from you and other people that it's a nice riding vehicle.
Yeah, you know, there's five tire combinations, and I think four of them are 22s, wheel tire combinations.
That's really big.
Yeah, that's big.
And that kind of takes some of the spring out of your
steps. Yeah, it does, exactly.
Okay, well, so let's, speaking of the, let's Ford can actually regain some face here with their Ford Expedition Max.
Yep.
That's a very different vehicle.
We just did a video on that from the Chicago Auto Show.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, me and Andre did a walk around.
It is 221 inches long. That's the Max version. And there's three different powertrains, and I was a little confused about this, but it's 380 horsepower is the base powertrain. Once again, twin turbocharged 3.5 liter V6 is all of these are. 400 horsepower, or the HO puts out 440 horsepower, but I believe they're trim dependent.
I want to say it's the Raptor engine, right?
Yeah, the 4.4, yeah. Yeah. But it this is based on trim.
Yeah.
10-speed automatic transmission, maximum towing can go up to 9,300 pounds, but that's with the non-max version with two-wheel drive, so not the long one. The long one is 9,000 pounds, which is still really good, and the base price is $66,295. And I gotta tell you, every Expedition I've driven over the past 5 years has surprised me.
Yeah, I liked it. I actually liked it a lot. You know, given the choice between that and the Navigator, I'd go for that.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah, I would.
It's cheaper.
And they have that new off-roady one, right?
Right. They have the Timberline edition, which is definitely, you know, the one I'd go for. So yeah. If you want one that actually goes off-road and has the off-road goodies, then go for the Ford Expedition Timberline.
Which we will hopefully be getting here at TFL at some point in time.
Yeah, we'd love to review it. Yeah. And there's also an Explorer Timberline.
Yeah. I want both, and I want them here, and I want them here now. So, Ford, if you're listening, please. We love you. Okay. So, but that is a pretty good vehicle all around. And we took one to Moab, even, and that had the FX4 package, I believe, and that did fine. It did really well. I really do wish it had a solid locker, but so what? It does well. How about we move over to Infiniti? What do you think?
Yeah, the Happy Hippo.
yeah,
the QX, they just refreshed it. Yeah. 400 horsepower, 5.6 liter V8, out of the Titan, of course, right?
Yeah.
7-speed automatic, max towing 8,500, base price 70,000. Surprisingly popular, right, in California, Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
It's kind of one of these... I'm going to call it niche vehicles, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where it fits into a certain niche and into certain communities, but it's certainly not as popular in any shape, way, or form as like the Suburban or the Yukon.
No, not even close. But what it is a giant luxury vehicle that Infiniti recently refreshed it and gave it a beautiful interior. So it's a very well-appointed interior.
Yeah, it's the sister brother to the Armada, which we'll be talking about soon.
Yeah. And then in terms of the underpinnings, they're pretty much the same.
Here's the thing. With this and the Lexus, right, which you just drove, so we can talk about that.
Right.
They're just not big enough, Nathan.
Yeah.
In this world, size matters. Width matters, length matters, towing matters, and I think the Japanese just have a hard time getting their mind around the fact that the Escalade or the Lincoln Navigator are such freaking big. They're buses. This is like a half a school bus.
Yeah, they're huge.
Yeah.
And but the thing is that with the Infiniti and Nissan and Toyota and Lexus, those vehicles are really the size of like the Yukon or the Tahoe. They're the smaller size. They're closer to that.
So here's a question, okay?
Yeah.
At what point do you, Jill, she works with Tim, right?
Yeah,
Jill,
yeah.
Simonello. Hi, Jill, how are you? She does this thing like where does she fit, right? Where she does what, she kind of stole what you used to do.
Yeah, it's all right.
You okay with that?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Jill, before you did it, Nathan used to crawl into trunks.
And, 12 years ago.
Yeah. When we were all thinner.
that's okay.
Anyway, it's okay. So the question is, she's small of stature.
She's like 4 foot eight.
I think she's like 5'1".
Okay.
Anyway, but
everything looks short to you.
Yeah. So. She's a shorter young lady.
Uh-huh.
The question is, when she gets in an Infiniti QX80, and maybe Jill, if you are listening to this or watching, let us know in the comments below. Do you feel like the difference in size between the QX80 and, let's say, a Suburban is that much more important to you, where you feel like this is more manageable, or are they just both so big that they overwhelm, like, your parking situation? So she lives in the city of Chicago.
Right.
Right. And how do you park? Maybe you can't park. I mean, that's Suburban. You can barely park in your garage. Probably not.
Probably not in most.
But can you? Maybe the defining feature is that, you know, the Infiniti is smaller and so it becomes usable for city dwellers? I don't know.
It may be. I do know that the seating position in all of these vehicles is very different. And actually, I think Jill would be much more comfortable driving an Infiniti or the Nissan because those seats really do cater to shorter people. Honestly, that I've seen personally. Whereas in some of these other vehicles are perhaps a lot longer to get, you know, harder to get to the steering wheel, harder to reach the pedals. Fortunately, most of these have adjustable pedals and steering. So that could be one of the things. But on top of that, I do agree that there's a size differential that has never been made up by the Japanese. However, with that being said, I have a feeling, and we're going to come up to this one very soon, that the Japanese have recently cooked up a winner amongst these.
Yeah, the Lexus LX600.
Nope. It's not the one.
All right, which one?
The Toyota Sequoia coming up.
All right, well, let's get to the Lexus LX600.
that I think is going to be great, but I think the Sequoia is a better
length,
better idea.
210, which is
the Lexus?
Yeah, you said 201, sorry.
Yeah, 201.
409 horsepower, twin turbo V6, same as in the Tundra, 10-speed auto.
Well, it's the hybrid V6, first of all. Does that come standard with the hybrid V6?
No.
Oh.
No, it comes with the regular.
Okay.
No hybrid, as far as I know.
Okay.
Twin turbo, I think it's coming, but not yet. So the word is it might be coming.
And the Sequoia is coming with, I know that for
a
fact.
Yeah, okay. But right now you get the one, same one that's in the Tundra. 10-speed automatic, base price 88,000, tows 8,000. And you're saying currently the closest we can get to an overseas Land Cruiser, which is true because it's based on that same chassis. So I just got to drive it. It's got all the off-road goodies.
Yeah.
So low range, air suspension.
Lockers.
It might.
But it's got their modern crawl control.
Toyota's. What is that called?
A-Track.
Yeah. It's got that. So which kind of replaces lockers in a Toyota, or a Lexus. And it can be had, Nathan, in an Ultra. I think it's called Ultimate or Ultra Premium, which actually is a 4-seater. So you can have it with only 4 seats. You can have it in a 2-row with 4 seats, a 2-row with 5 seats, or a 3-row with 7 seats, or a 3-row with 6 seats. So you can go 2-2-2, you can go 2-2, you can go 2-3, or you can go 2-3-2.
I'm so confused, but I get what you're saying.
you see what I'm saying?
They have a lot of different configurations for it.
Me too, but the Ultra Premium one is pretty crazy. Uh-huh. Those back seats are like private jet seats where they recline, and you got the little thing that comes up under your foot. And I want to say that gets up to like $140,000 or $50,000.
I'm sure it does.
Kind of competes with the Range Rover Autobiography. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it's a big old Lexus, not as big as a Suburban or an Escalade or a Navigator, but nevertheless, it's got that kind of button-down Toyota luxury. So, fine leather everywhere, real wood everywhere.
Right.
And it's got Toyota's new infotainment system, so love it or hate it, you're going to get it.
Yeah, that new 14-inch screen.
Yeah, big screen.
Yeah, it's... We've been having pros and cons with it. I just recently did a video on the Lexus NX 350, and it has that new screen as well. And I got to tell you, there's a lot of pros and there's a lot of cons.
I hate the user. I don't want to log into my car.
The user interface drives me crazy, and
any manufacturer out there, please don't make me log into my car.
Simplify. Just keep
I hate logging into my computer.
Yeah.
My phone. Why are you making me log into my car?
Yeah.
I just want to open the door. Push a button and drive.
Yeah.
Do I have to log in every time I want to go get some milk? It's just crazy.
Yeah, I know. And this system was doing the same thing.
And it's supposed to log you in with your phone, but half the time you may not have your phone or you forget to turn
your
Bluetooth
on.
Or somebody else drives it. Or you and your wife both have a log into it, so it's confused as to who's driving. Just don't make me log into a car. That's my rant. Sorry.
Yeah. No. Your rant is absolutely justified. It drove me crazy. I decided to try to get creative with the settings.
And it's just
going to
get worse. You know why?
Well, yeah.
Because it's a way of upselling you, right?
Sure.
Right? You want navigation?
You want that subscription?
You want a navigation? It's a subscription service
yep.
now. You want remote start? It's a subscription service now. Just knock it off, please.
Yeah, I really do hope that we put the brakes on this soon. But it's up to the consumers to do that.
And I have done a full review of it both on and off-road. So once again, they're out there. Go to TFL. I think off-road would be off-road, and car probably would be where the regular walk around is. It's a great vehicle. They'll sell every one of them, and it's very thirsty.
Now we can quickly jump over this one because it's the Nissan.
Not as thirsty as it was.
Yeah, the Nissan Armada. It's basically the same thing as the
QX80. Stodgy.
They recently did an upgrade where they changed the front end and the rear end.
I found like it was a little stuffy, a little stodgy, a little like what I imagined Tokyo gangster would think is luxurious.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't think that at all. I actually thought it was something very much, I think a Canadian gangster would be like, yeah, this is hardcore.
Why did it have
Canadian.
Are there such things?
No.
Canadians
are all nice. They're nice.
I just felt like maybe that's not fair. I shouldn't say, a Japanese gangster. I have no clue what the Yakuza. What they like. I think they like those crowns. In all the movies, they drive those Toyota Crowns,
which are the coolest cars ever.
Right. So I don't know, but let me kind of put it back in the realm of what I do know.
Yeah.
It is very traditionally luxurious.
Yes,
and that's
quite
what I
nice.
Mean, traditionally yeah. luxurious,
and it's a much better bargain than the Infiniti. And I just don't understand why you would buy an Infiniti over one of these because it's the same vehicle.
Because you want the happy hippo. You want to show your neighbors that you've got.
I guess
money.
It stands out a little bit more on the outside, and maybe that's part of it. But same amount of horsepower, tows 8,500 pounds. But you can the base price of the Armada. It's one of the better values here. $48,000.
Also very thirsty.
Yeah, very, very thirsty. And it comes with a 7-speed like its brother, which is unusual because they do have a 9-speed in the family with the Titan, but that's a whole different story.
400 horsepower, 5.6-liter V8 out of a Titan, obviously.
It's a
great engine, but, it feels like 10 years ago.
It's a very old vehicle, and the rumor has it that they're going to be replacing that with some sort of hybrid in the future. That's
so,
what we're hearing.
Speaking of the hybrid, Toyota Sequoia, 437 horsepower. It's available with that twin turbo right now, but there is a V6 hybrid coming.
No.
The
Sequoia
available?
Is only coming.
As a hybrid?
Yeah, as a hybrid. That I know for sure. What they did is they simplified the Sequoia. Now, we don't know the pricing on the Sequoia. We haven't driven it yet. We've had a chance to do videos with it.
Yeah.
Right. And Andre's been at those. That's on TFL Truck and TFL Now. And maybe we talked about it on TFL Talk. So max towing 9,000 pounds, which is way up there. It has a twin turbocharged 3.5-liter V6 hybrid 10-speed automatic transmission. Only available with the hybrid, just like the TRD off-road for the Tundra. Same thing. Can only get it with the hybrid. It is expected to have a starting price in the $50,000 zone, but we have no idea where it's going to go from there. And the Sequoia is expected to fill the void that was left behind from the Land Cruiser and other vehicles.
Yeah. Once again,
there's a reason, though.
Once again, Nathan, I am completely befuddled by that decision. And we've said this before, right, to lose the Land Cruiser in a market that is starving, that is addicted to crossovers and SUVs. Why would you get rid of the most well-known, most, I think, interesting nameplate you have? And if we lived in a world right now where, let's say, the four-door sedan were on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I get it.
Yeah.
Everybody wants a four-door sedan, right?
Yeah.
Everybody loves a four-door sedan. But everybody loves crossovers and
SUVs. Yeah.
And then they got rid of the most popular one.
Yeah, I know. And
most popular in terms of like name recognition.
Name recognition. I agree with the name part, but simply put, the reason why they got rid of it from our market is pretty simple. They couldn't get the return on their investment they have been getting. They've been making major changes.
So redesign it.
I agree.
Rebrand it.
As a matter of fact, they should have just taken
it.
The Sequoia, changed the front end on it, put it, and said, oh, this is the new Land Cruiser.
Yeah, exactly. Find a new way.
Keep the name is the point.
I know. It's like when they got rid of the FJ. It's like when Nissan got rid of the Xterra. Somebody at Nissan who got rid of the Xterra should be taken to the woodshed and, like, read the writing.
Oh, I agree 100%. Right you are, Roman. Right you are on that
Jimmy,
one.
You know that off-roading and overlanding are really popular right now. I do. Well, then, Jimmy, why do we get rid of our biggest and most popular and most, I would say with the aftermarket, right, biggest supported off-roader? Because nobody wanted the Xterra?
No, and the people are going to say platform, which was part of it, and safety, which was part of it, and there's a bunch of other things, but they never brought it back, which is the issue. So the Sequoia, the cool thing about that is that the Sequoia is going to have a solid rear axle. I don't think any of these other vehicles on this list have that. Unlike its brother, the Lexus, I guess you could say, or the that's Lexus. It has a solid rear axle directly out of the Tundra, and it's a cheaper vehicle to build because currently the current Sequoia is very expensive to build. Some of it's handmade. They're going to be building this at the same plant that they're building Tundras at, so they share a lot of components.
I think they're moving, Tacoma
Texas.
And the Tundra were built in San Antonio, and I think they're moving some of the production of the Tacoma to Mexico, right?
Some of it's going to Mexico.
And then the Sequoia is going to be built in San Antonio.
That's what I believe. So, it's going to be an interesting vehicle. I actually like the looks of it better than the Tundra. I think it's a better looking vehicle. And some of the numbers are really impressive.
I think it works, that front, that big Maw works better for some reason.
Well, it's not quite as big. For one thing, they cut it down with a different bumper in the front and the head. Yeah, just a couple little tweaks made it, I think, better looking. Still no tow hooks. So, you know, curse you, Toyota, without the tow hooks. I don't understand. But in terms of the rest of the numbers here, they look really impressive.
Hey, by the way, speaking of the Tundra, you know, Andre just towed with it down to Arizona because we're doing a project called Chargezilla. That's Charge. Once again, Nathan came up with that name.
Hey, that's me.
Yeah, that's Nathan. So we're taking that F100 and we're electrifying it with our partners down there.
It's going to be a huge series.
Yeah.
It's our most ambitious.
But because we've been towing so much with the Tundra, we're almost at our 10,000 when we let him go.
Oh.
We're going to be very close to that. So we've only had it for like, 3 months now, but we're going to hit 10,000 really quickly.
Yeah, we just hit 5,000 last week.
Now we're going to be at like 7.
Because we're going cross country.
Yeah. So if you guys are interested, if anybody's interested in buying our Tundra, it's going to be up for sale. I know vehicles are really hard to get. Ask a TFL truck. It's red, it's delimited, and let us know if you're interested.
There's a couple videos out there on it. You might be able to learn a little bit about it. But I think that it's going to be about a month probably before we are able to sell it.
Pretty soon, yeah. I mean, we're pretty much, you know, and we hopefully have some other trucks coming. I don't want to talk about them.
No, can't do that.
Because I don't know if we're going to get them.
That's why we don't want to talk about
them. So, it's time, I think, to say adieu. Normally we keep them much longer, but we've hit
put a lot of miles on a short amount of time.
Exactly. Yeah. So let us know if you're interested. Please don't lowball us. We know what it's worth.
Seriously.
If we want to do that, we can go to Vroom or Carvana and get
seriously.
I'll give you $40,000 for it. I'll give you $5,000, no.
Yeah, please.
Please don't.
Yeah. And we would really appreciate it if you didn't send us emails just asking questions about it and then not actually responding, because that happened to me when I was trying to sell the Blazer.
Or just watch the video. If you have any questions, watch the video.
Just watch the video. There you go.
And look, we know, like I said, we know what it's worth, and we have to take that money and turn it into
another vehicle.
So, you know, we're not going to be making a profit off of it. We just want to put it back to work, making more reviews and more videos of different trucks, because I don't know how many more videos you can do with the Tundra. I think we've done about everything.
Yeah. And there's other products out there to be bought, and there's other products coming out. And we're going to try to keep our fleet fresh.
Yeah. It's like, you know, the lifeblood of any new car company is new product. The lifeblood of any reviewing site is new vehicles.
Yep.
All right. The last one on our list, Nathan, Jeep Wagoneer and the Grand Wagoneer. 214 inches, so it's a little bit shorter than some of the others.
It's a little bit shorter than some, but a little bit longer than others. It's actually longer than
next
the
page.
It's a little bit longer than the the Armada and the Lexus. So
it's got two powertrains, both of which are relatively thirsty. 382 horsepower, 5.7 liter V8 for the Wagoneer, and then 471 in the big old Hemi, 6.4 liter V8, 8-speed automatic, max towing, dude. 10,000 if configured. That is the most. That is crazy.
It's a beast.
It's by far the most.
And I got to tell you that I was so disappointed when I first saw pictures of it, but seeing it in person and driving I liked it a lot more. It's one of my favorite luxury SUVs. But
base price $59,000 for the Wagoneer, $88,000, but you'll never see them for that.
Never.
The Series 3 Wagoneers are over $100,000 easy.
The interior design is phenomenal. The driving
most
comfort.
Screens of any vehicle.
Yeah, I think it's just ridiculous.
Seven screens, in
something
the
to that effect. There's going to be a screen that's mounted on your butt at one point in time. and the thing about these vehicles from Jeep, they Jeep was like, oh, they're not a Jeep. Yes, they're a Jeep. And we already made the argument with several videos we put out. And they perform like Jeeps. We took one off-road, and it did really well, remarkably well, with that adjustable air suspension. At the end of the day, this is essentially something that's about the same size as a Tahoe, but it is very, very luxurious and smooth. And
Jeep took it to the next level.
They really did.
So it almost feels like if there were a Lincoln version of Jeep, this is where that should fall.
I would say yes. I would also say, I would argue that I've been in the Bentayga before. And
you think it's as good as the Bentayga?
It's as good as the Bentayga.
Wow.
And I will put money on that.
I think you're right. In
terms of interior appointments and all that,
I mean, once again, air suspension.
Oh, just a creamy, smooth ride.
It's got, you know, Uconnect 5.0, which is actually really good.
It's a pretty good system, yeah.
Yeah. It's over the top.
It's incredible. It really is. But it's still one of those things where I'd be utterly terrified, even if I had the money to afford one. I'd be utterly terrified to take it off-road.
The other thing about it is I was talking to Jim Morrison, mm-hmm. and I felt like, you know, I have to be a little critical, right? That's my job. So, mm-hmm. Jim, I'm sorry, but it feels a little old man-y. And I say that because I had one and an old man came up to me.
Well, that's a fine-looking vehicle you got there, son.
Exactly, like with the golf clubs. It was the whole kit and caboodle.
Wow, that reminds me of my 58 Cadillac.
So I was telling Jim, you know, maybe you like try like bamboo. You know what I mean? You know, instead of like fine, you know, wood, try something different. Try making it bamboo-y or, you know, I think Tesla did that right, where they came up with very luxurious materials that were all vegan and were all natural.
They did a really good job of that. I'll give them credit on that.
Yeah, so I think modern luxury could be green. It doesn't have to be like, you know.
Why
like,
would you do green in a 6.4 liter V8?
Yeah.
The point is in the future, though, we'll have the 4xe version of it. That's where you want to put the green in there, right?
Yeah, the Grand Wagoneer hopefully is coming in that. I know that the Grand Cherokee
just got
the thumbs up on that. So that should be out any day now.
Yeah.
By the way, great vehicle if you want to go green and you want to save money because you do get that tax credit because you can drive it. I think it's 21 miles of all electric range, if I recall.
Right.
The Jeep is 20. No, maybe the Jeep's 21 and that one's 28. One of the two.
You mean the Wrangler?
The Wrangler might be.
It's 21, I think.
And this one might be 28. It's one of the other.
That sounds about right because the Wrangler's is super heavy.
Yeah, and it's got those big knobby tires.
And we've actually done loops with them and off-road too in all electric mode. So you should check those videos out.
But it's good to see, you know, that Jeep is, you know, now playing with the big boys. Mm-hmm. What I mean by big, I mean big-ass SUV boys.
Big-ass SUVs. It's not as big as a full-blown Suburban, though, or the the big L version of the Lincoln or Max version of the Escape. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. So the question is, Nathan, which of these, you know, if you had 100K, would you buy?
Jeep.
Okay, fair.
Just there. I mean, and you know what? It would be the Jeep and then the Cadillac or the Jeep and the Suburban. That's kind of where I'd go. But if I wanted to save money, then I think the Nissan Armada. Mm. It's a hell of a good deal for the money compared to these other ones. It's way cheaper, and it gives you a lot of stuff for the money.
Yeah, I'd probably go with the Chevy, probably just because. Actually, I would probably go with the Ford Expedition Mat because there's a Timberline version of it. And while I do appreciate and admire the Wagoneer, it's just very expensive, you know? And so to me, the Ford Expedition Max, it gets you all of this, gets you the off-roady stuff, and it's still relatively affordable.
If I had the money, you know, that's what I would do.
This number, $88,000 for the Grand Wagoneer, is very deceptive because most of them are like Series 2 or Series 3.
You're going to be 100 grand deep, pretty much. But, you know, you're going to be 100 grand deep with a lot of these other ones, too.
Yeah. So I guess, or, you know, you can never go wrong with like a Tahoe with the air suspension, right?
Yeah.
You just had that here as well.
Yeah. Actually, you know, let me back up. I was first, yes, the Jeep, but my second choice would actually be the GMC Yukon with the diesel because I took that across country. And I adored it with that diesel. It was absolutely the best road trip vehicle I had ever driven. So those are the two.
There you go, guys. Well, thank you for joining us for this fun episode of Big Ass American and Japanese. I was going to say German, but Germans don't.
Germans don't build anything like that.
Yeah,
not yet.
They don't. Yeah, I wonder why.
Well, because
an X9. Dare we say it?
No, because that doesn't have a frame. These all have frames.
A Q9?
No.
Where do you go?
No, you don't go anywhere with those. I mean, Mercedes-Benz probably has the largest one.
Volkswagen could do it.
They could do it, but they're not going to.
Volkswagen could do it.
They're not going to. They're going electric.
You know what they do? You know what the Germans do? Mm. When they go big, they go van.
Well, yeah, which makes total sense.
Right, they're too
logical.
Germans
are logical, exactly. Even though they'll make controls that are befuddling because they'll make a turn signal hard to use.
They'll be like, why would you buy this when you could buy a Sprinter?
Yes, Sprinter van makes most sense.
Yeah, you could put 12 people in there, 15.
Exactly. See, but that's the whole thing. So not to put anybody down, I actually, all these vehicles are quite good. There are deals to be made, I suppose, but right now in today's market, good luck finding any of these anywhere near MSRP.
Yeah, I know, dude. I don't think we're even seeing the dark at the beginning of the telly.
Really, I do. I think
Toyota seems to be getting like their chip stuff down.
Yeah, yeah. And they're selling some of their vehicles at MSRP.
But you know, the Germans now are having issues getting wiring harnesses because of what's happening in Europe.
Yep.
So
that's gonna be a bit of a slowdown too. But prediction.
You had a ship that sank with every expensive.
So the Germans are having a little bit of a problem because a bunch of the ship went
Bugatti
down.
Bugatti and Lamborghini.
Audis, Lamborghinis, and Porsches went into the deep. And rumor has it that some of these were going to some VIPs. So, oops, sorry. But, you know, these things happen.
Did you have a Lamborghini on that?
I didn't. I was waiting for my Lamborghini order for the next one.
There were some, you know, pretty prominent YouTubers that had cars on that.
Yeah, it sucks, but it's also kind of like, they got insurance. So it just means they have to wait longer.
If you're buying trucks, right? The good thing is they're not coming aboard a boat.
Yeah, I guess. If they're built here, hey, so much the better. Exactly. There you go. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Patreons, for supporting us. We appreciate that as well. Without your support, we couldn't do what we do.
Yep, remember, go to tfl-studios.com if you want to see all of our videos, podcasts, TikToks in one place. And as always, Nathan, thank you, and thank you guys. See you next time. Ciao.
Cheers.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.